Almost as soon as Cache Valley was settled by Mormon pioneers, water was diverted out of the Logan River. Rather than cluster themselves around the mouth of Logan Canyon where the river came out, they started digging ditches, and gravity fed the entire valley through a system of canals. In the 1850s, there was a drought in Utah, and the Salt Lake Valley was already getting crowded, with pioneers coming west from the States and from places in Europe. And the leader of the Mormon Church, Brigham Young, needed to spread out, and the native grasses of Cache Valley seemed promising for supporting a community of saints. From trappers who had worked in the valley but never settled, he knew that winters were harsh there, but the water seemed plentiful. It was a gamble, but he decided to send settlers in 1856. Joel Ricks was one of those early settlers. He moved his family to Cache Valley in 1859 when there were only about 150 families living there.
March 25th, 1860. Ezra T. Benson came to Logan to locate as president of this valley. The people turned out en masse and fenced in his city lot, and I dug him a well. March 27th, we commenced to dig the first water ditch along the foot of the hill, known as the Logan and Hyde Park Canal.
The first drop of water that moved out of the Logan River and into the Logan and Hyde Park Canal marked a permanent change to the landscape of Cache Valley. The settlers soon realized that they could move water almost anywhere they wanted it. The canals were dug by hand, or with ox teams pulling something they called a go-devil, a primitive plow made from two huge logs. Pioneer diaries from the late 1860s to even after the First World War are full of canal stories. Even the most tight-lipped, short-handed pioneer man mentions going to canal meetings or dealing with canal-related lawsuits or fixing a breach in the canal, in between his similarly brief mentions of an infant dying or a particularly annoying flare-up of hemorrhoids. The diary of James Sherlock Cantwell has this entry from 1915.
July 8. I am busy all the time trying to distribute the water on the canal. Everything needs water. The beets and potatoes all need water, and the supply in Logan River is going less all the time.
Fast forward 100 years to today, to this summer. Follow the Logan River through town, where it's siphoned off into what's called the Little Logan River, a canal technically, that runs under Main Street and right through the public high school. It feeds yards on the west side of town. It's a Wednesday morning, and water is running down the gutter on the side of 300 West in Logan, where Beth Shirley, who moved here from Boston last year, has a two-hour window to water her lawn.
So the grass was super green. It is not right now, but when I first bought the house, it was green because the people who were trying to sell the house had been using their rights every week pretty regularly to increase the value of the home. But then a couple weeks after I moved in, it started to get brown because I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing.
And how long have you lived in this house?
Just over a year. I bought it in July of 2014.
And did you know that you had water rights when you bought the house?
I did. I did not know what that meant, though.
So it wasn't a selling point?
No, not at all. Neighbors had come and introduced themselves, and this really sweet woman who lives just three houses north of me, I one day saw her husband out there messing with his water rights, and I just went up and asked if he could point me in the direction of the person to talk to, and instead he just came and showed me how to use everything. He came over and showed me how this fancy pump thing works, and how to flood the yard by blocking off certain sections of the ditch, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Have you been pretty good about doing this every Wednesday?
Nope. I have used it once this year. This is the second time. The only reason I used it that one time was my parents were coming to town, and I was pretty embarrassed about how brown the yard was. So, yeah, it's a real pain. It takes a good half hour to get it all set up and then another half hour to take it all down. And I just, aesthetically, it doesn't bother me that the yard is brown. My block of time, I pull out these stopper. Oh, snake!
Well, he's not happy that you've just flooded his home.
Nope. Sorry, buddy. So there's a little divot in my section of the ditch where it will flow as soon as I pull out this metal thing and blocks that hold up the metal thing. Then the water, I block it from going underneath my driveway, and it redirects the water into the ditch that goes down the side of my yard, and it goes all the way into my backyard. And if I had a garden back there, that's where I would pull it out to irrigate.
And then you use this pump.
Yeah.
Which looks like a modified lawnmower?
It is a modified lawnmower. It came with the house. It did not come with instructions because somebody rigged it up themselves. It's pretty impressive. When you think about it, that somebody came up with this idea. And if you look down the street, everybody has a completely different pump system that they're using. Like, no one else has a rigged up lawnmower. This is why I don't do this very often.
Okay.
Put that back on so it doesn't bubble over.
Handmade plug.
Yep. Right? Someone went to a lot of trouble to make this. I have no idea how old it is. All right, and fingers crossed.
That's how it's done.
Yep.
Beth Shirley's house and small lot in Logan didn't come with instructions. This pump was sitting in her backyard when she bought the house. It really does look like a lawnmower, but it's this wonderful aquamarine blue color that they used to paint machinery with in the 50s. And it has some long plastic tubes coming out of it, so it's clearly not a lawnmower. Beth had to be told and shown by someone in the neighborhood, someone who'd lived there a really long time, how to water her lawn using the ditch water. This experience isn't unique to Beth. There aren't handbooks for using this irrigation system. Each canal is different. Each yard is different. You're just kind of expected to know what to do. But over time, this knowledge amasses into a collective understanding, and a culture emerges.
I think the first exposure I had to some of the folk rules about canal use and water usage was from my neighbor, William Skidmore, down in Logan.
Randy Williams is a folklorist and oral history specialist with the Utah State University Special Collections and Archives.
He taught me the rules of how to take my turn, from small things like turning on and opening up the gate and using the water in an appropriate way and damming up. So that was a rule for that neighborhood, and he taught me how to do that appropriately. And there was a definite consequence. If you didn't do it appropriately, you flooded somebody's yard or their home, worse.
I love the phrase folk rules that Randy Williams uses. This encompasses all that you just know how to do it kind of knowledge, all these unspoken things that no one even writes down.
Well, I think folk rules just basically defined are those rules that we learn in small groups, folk groups. And there's rules in our neighborhood, and you go to another neighborhood, and they have a little tweak on those rules for kick the can. With water, you mostly learn the rules of the irrigation company that you are on or with through your neighbors. Sometimes it's just somebody walking through, you know, from the canal company or from your canal community, giving information about what's happening, or they tell somebody in your neighborhood, and then that person communicates it to you, kind of like a phone tree, but usually a lot of times it's in person. Somebody goes door to door and explains it and then leaves the responsibility to somebody else in the neighborhood to tell other people, and it works its way through. A lot of those rules are folk created and manipulated to work. But more so than that, I think those folk rules that with water or anything else is the beauty of cooperation, the beauty of neighborhoods, the beauty of folk groups. I've learned a lot from my, you know, canal board and from my neighbors about how to be a good water user by, you know, those folk rules. I've never seen a handbook.
Randy Williams says that this whole process connects us to something much older and bigger than ourselves. That every time you get your hands dirty or pull up a rusty gate out of the gutter and watch the water flow into your little hand-dug ditch, or fiddle with an old pump someone made before you were born, you're connecting to a logic and a system that's bigger than you. This is the folklore of the West.
I think the whole idea of the water system in the West is ingenious, and I have benefited from it my whole life. My great-grandfather had water that came out of a dam, and as a child, I recognized what he was doing, but I wasn't involved. But then as an adult, having the opportunity to open up the gate and bring it down into my yard and making sure I had the rows prepared and my little dams or my rocks or what have you. And I have had moments in my own life realizing that I am like my great-grandfather. And my great-grandfather inherited a system that he didn't create and a logic he didn't create, but we were the beneficiaries of that logic and we bring it forward. We are connecting back to our pioneer ancestors who are then connecting back to people beyond and before them that gave them that logic to do something with the water. So I think when we're working those irrigation ditches, we are hearkening back to something.
Beth Shirley is definitely not into connecting to any pioneer ancestors.
I'd really like to xeriscape my front yard and then I don't have to do the pump at all.
But Sean Hasboon, another non-native resident of Logan, has fully embraced the irrigation system in her backyard. She took me on a tour of her huge vegetable garden.
Okay, so while you can see, the way that we have our garden set up is that the ditch water comes through on the back end. And then there's little mini dishes down each row of vegetables. And we can control the flow by putting some rocks or dirt or sandbags at the head of the row.
And you dug all of these little ditches?
I did, because we plow it every year. It was quite the process.
Do you know how many there are?
There are 27. So the garden is 90 feet long by 33 feet wide. And there are 27 rows.
And would you call this a hobbyist garden?
Oh, I think we could have a small farmer's market out of here.
What are you growing?
I would call it a large hobbyist garden. Well, here's our squash. We have summer squash and winter squash, all varieties. We have a ton of tomatoes. You can see in those upright trellises. We have two rows of peppers. You can see our melons are doing well this year. There's some leeks and some dahlias, just because they're pretty. And then you can't really see beyond the wall of tomato.
Sean has access to her water share on Friday nights at 7 p.m. The journey starts in her backyard.
This is where we leave the property and get to walk on other people's property. And we kind of have to clear the ditch along the way. I brought a hoe and a rake because when the water runs through the ditch, it collects a lot of grass and sticks, piles them up. So I just kind of, you know, if I see anything really egregious or obstructive, I get it out of there. We've passed two gates, we're gonna pass a few more. All right, so we gotta wind around here.
I had no idea. I thought we would walk like to the end of your property.
No. This is our gate right here.
Yeah, but there's no water.
No, we're gonna go. We have to go open the water at the road. All right. Gate number four, open, check. Gate number five. Not very open. Now it's open. Alright. So now we actually get to see the water.
So we've walked more than a block.
Oh yeah, we've walked.
Alright. There's water.
This is the water.
And it's running down the street.
Yes. So, first things first is opening our gate. And putting in the blocker.
The blocker prevents the water from going down the street and diverts it into Sean's ditch. Which really is just that. It's dirt. It's not a concrete-lined canal or anything, if that's what you were picturing. It takes the water nearly an hour to get from the street back to the garden, where it slowly fills in each row. Sean says that she usually goes and makes dinner while she waits. Sean learned the folk rules of watering her garden from her husband, who lived here for a few years before they were married. He learned from a roommate when he moved in, and that roommate learned from the guy who lived there before him. There's this whole little folk logic to just this one yard, and it's generations of grad students who have passed through for 4 years at a time. Sean loves being a part of it.
Is this process enjoyable?
I actually really like it. I think the whole thing is rare, and it's a really satisfying way to water, even though it's really inefficient.
The inefficiency that Sean's talking about is a whole other story. Water managers in northern Utah have the unique challenge of trying to preserve this historic irrigation system that so many residents are in love with, on the one hand, with the realities of an aging infrastructure and an uncertain water future on the other. Luckily, I found someone who studies water managers and how they're dealing with this challenge ahead of them.
I'm Andrea Armstrong. I'm an assistant professor at Lafayette College, and I study irrigation organizations and how they manage water. I came to Utah State University to get my doctorate in sociology, and I found the irrigation groups here to be so fascinating, I wanted to devote my attention to them over the 4 years I was here. I had my eye out when I moved to Utah for small streams and gullies and things that I was used to seeing on the East Coast landscape. And in July, in August, they're just not here. But what I did find was water running down my curb and gutter in the middle of a July afternoon and thought, this is pretty cool. Something's going on here. So with that in mind, I've developed my interest in these little water systems and thinking about how all these little ditches that we see throughout Cache County and how they relate to the bigger water picture. So in Cache County, we have over 100 irrigation companies or irrigation organizations, and they each have water rights that they then control water and distribute it to their water users. It's a pretty unique system in that these irrigation groups can structure the timing and the mechanism through which water is delivered to someone's house, but then it's hands off. And once someone has that water, they have the ability to use it on their landscape, in their gardens, whatever way they see fit. The main objective of the irrigation group is to get water to their shareholders, to their users. And so managing water means anything from pulling the diversion gate on the Logan River to making sure that the ditches are clean so that their water users can receive their shares. The infrastructure that's used to convey water now is not far afield from what it was originally. Originally, these were earthen ditches dug by oxen with special plows behind them to make the ditches line at the right grade so that water would flow without pumping or too much encouragement. And now the canal systems are built largely on those original designs, but some have made improvements such as canal linings or in some cases even piping to increase the efficiency of the water that would be delivered to water users.
The first thing that I thought of actually when I saw water running down the side of the road was evaporation. Where is this water going? How much of it is getting lost before it reaches the place that it's going to? I mean, is this an efficient system?
The key with thinking about efficiency is efficiency for who or efficiency for what. And open canals or canals with earthen bottoms tend to lose quite a bit of water. So I've heard estimates of a 20% loss to evaporation, and some canals can lose up to 60% over the entire length of the canal, especially if that canal doesn't have a lined bottom. It might just be earthen and rocks, and so a lot of the water then is lost to shallow groundwater. In a closed canal system where irrigation water is being moved through buried pipes or even pipes above ground, the losses to evaporation and seepage are much, much lower. There are some risks to pipes breaking, and the cost of piping canals is incredibly high, especially for some irrigation companies that don't necessarily have the cash reserves to just go out and put that new infrastructure in. But a major savings for them is that they will have a very known quantity of water that they are delivering to their water users, and they don't have to question how much would be lost on a given day under certain temperatures or with soil moisture being at a certain level. Now, with piping and irrigation system, we start to lose some of the benefits that a lot of Cache Valley residents have come accustomed to with our open canals. Things like willow trees growing nearby the canal, or having ducks in your neighborhood. These are uncommon to the arid Utah landscape, but we have them in Cache Valley and in Logan because these open canals create a surface water system that's heavily, heavily managed by irrigation interests, but also benefit people that don't have irrigation shares. And so by closing some of these systems, we would lose the ability to, A, see the water, which is, I think, very important. If you can see the water, you know where water's coming from. You know that it's part of your life and part of your neighborhood. But also you lose the ecosystems and the landscape features that are dependent upon open irrigation canals.
Andrea Armstrong is starting a new job at Lafayette College in Pennsylvania. I asked her what she's going to miss about Cache Valley, both as a researcher and a resident.
This is such a unique irrigation system worldwide. I've been reading a bit more of the book Cadillac Desert lately, and this is a famous book on water management in the West. And the author, Mark Reisner, points out to the Mormon pioneers as being very, very foundational in their irrigation technology, that a lot of bigger irrigation systems in the West have been based on some of the early Mormon irrigation infrastructure. I see the landscape of Logan is so unique compared to even other places in the West that haven't had this interconnection between agriculture, water management, and the urban settlements that are nestled amongst all of it. When I think about the water features that I've grown attached to or accustomed to seeing in my daily life, humans are so connected to those water features. We put them there, we decide how much water flows through canals, how much water passes through these small ditches that run through my neighborhood. And so, in thinking about the future of those small systems, I'd like to think that it's up to us as residents of Cache Valley to shape their future, to decide which ones of those we keep, or which ones we're willing to sacrifice for more efficient water delivery systems. I'll miss thinking about how these canals are the way they are because we've made them that way. And I'd like to hope that they will continue to be something that we want them to be, which is more than just getting water from point A to point B. It's become part of the landscape and the local culture.
I don't know if you've noticed, but everyone I talked to for this story used words like rare, unique, or special to describe the irrigation canals in Cache Valley. And even those who think that the canals are antiquated or even dangerous relics from the past in need of serious upgrading can probably agree that they are at least unique. And whether people feel connected to the water through their pioneer roots or because they grew up building Huckleberry Finn-style rafts and rope swings on the canal in their backyard, or just because they like the giant cottonwood trees that grow in what would otherwise be a sagebrush flat, everyone can probably settle on its specialness. The famous American historian Frederick Jackson Turner visited Logan from Harvard in the summer of 1924. He wrote to his wife,
"I walked in the moonlight in this wonderful mountain-walled valley last night and marveled. The song of running irrigation rivulets, the smell of the lush green meadows, the miles of concrete walks, bridges, and aqueducts, everything trim and garnished."